present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello again. We start this week's quiz with an interesting item spotted in a Ghana newspaper.
Ghana is to change over to driving on the right. The change will be made gradually.
Well, that was sent to us by Ted Shepherd of Warrington and read by the silken-voiced Brian Perkins. On to this week's panel, and we welcome back to the programme the young and sprightly parliamentary sketch writer of The Guardian, Andrew Rawnsley, who's been allowed out for the night, but only in the company of his senior, The Observer's Simon Hoggart. Well, facing them for the first time on the news quiz is author and journalist Frances Edmonds and her chaperone, Alan Corran. Before we let the games commence, let's pause briefly to take in an announcement from the events diary of the Lincolnshire Trust for Nature Conservation.
Saturday, August the 4th, guided butterfly walks will be available at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. At 10 p.m, a moth trap will be used, and there'll be a barbecue.
Oh, the lucky ones will get a leg. And those good works were brought to our attention by Mr. and Mrs. T. Armitage of Almby by Spittle, Lincolnshire. On to round one now, and Simon Hoggart. This week, which branch of Sainsbury's closed down?
This is Dr. David Owen, the grocer, Mr. Sainsbury, who had been the money bags behind the STP for a very long time. But there's a lot of them left, actually, the STP. They're all over the place. One of them is the Duke of Devonshire, who's alleged to be the richest man in England, who joined the STP, which was one way of getting rid of their middle-class image. And they wound up. And Dr. David Owen is going around looking for a job, possibly a checkout boy at Sainsbury's.
Yes. But anyway, I thought about the former political vacuum, the STP, now renamed the RIP, which in recent months has seen its poll ratings slump from a decent negligible to a worrying oblivion. The last straw came at the weekend when the party held a ballot on its future and still managed to lose its deposit. Andrew Rawnsley, the first one for you. Who's opened an institution that suggests microchips wrapped in newspapers?
Oh, this is the very important summit between the two world leaders, President Gorbachev and President Maxwell of Mirror Newspapers, and they met up to found something called the Gorbachev-Maxwell Institute for Technology, and its first task will be developing ways of recycling all those unsold copies of The European. Is that right?
Absolutely right. It's the I wouldn't have put it that way myself. It's the user-friendly Soviet Mikhail Gorbachev who ceremonially opened the Maxwell Gorbachev Institute of Technology in Minnesota, a joint venture between the acceptable face of communism and one of Robert Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, an overwhelming body of opinion, made a £35 million donation to the Institute, an act extensively covered by the Daily Mirror. It seems an appropriate moment to pause and catch up on a story we covered several weeks ago, the establishment in Oxford of the Rupert Murdoch Professorship of Communication, which prompted in The Guardian this statement from the Murdoch Corporation's chairman, Richard Searby.
There are too many people applying for jobs in communications who have not grasped the importance of good writing. Spelling, that is, to put it kindly, in general use, and grammatical construction.
Our thanks to the appropriately named Tom Riddles of Heckmondwike for that. Frances Edmonds, a very warm welcome to the programme. Here's your first question. Where is boeuf no longer à la mode?
This is the dreaded French.
Are we?
There is a disease knocking around, BSE. Boeuf sauvage étranger. That's to say English beef. And the French are refusing to eat it, saying that it will drive them all mad. The boy Gummer is out in Brussels, I think, saying that if you don't eat our beef, we will ban your soft French cheeses, saying that they're riddled with listeria. But I think it was the recent European summit, I think it was a French commissioner was seen to have had a steak sandwich and the beef was English, so we're winning. Is that it?
Yep, that's it. You've got your marks there. This, of course, refers to this week's gastronomic kickoff when France, Italy and Germany put a temporary ban on British beef, the event which, for a brief period at least, had Europe more united than it's ever been since the Black Death. However, after lengthy discussions, the beef war ended when European ministers came up with an agreement which would also do away with the butter mountain. John Selwyn Gummers agreed to feed it to his daughter. In all this, there was one patriotic note of optimism spotted by an anonymous listener who saw a sign outside a Sutton butcher's which read,
"Go mad, buy some British beef."
Alan Corran, round one comes to a lyrical end with this musical clue.
Don't sleep in the sun, we're darling. Don't stand in the pouring rain. Don't sleep in the sun, we're darling. The night is long. Forget your foolish pride, nothing's wrong. Now you're beside me again.
Alan, where did the stars look down on stars?
But yes, my new partner just went, oh. That was a cry from Francis Edmonds, who's written Northern Line on a piece of paper, which is meaningless to me and probably the person who set the question. I think this is about one of the Howes living in a cardboard box, isn't it?
Yes.
Mrs. Howe, I mean Lady Howe, whatever she is after Thatcher's finished with her old man. I mean, the something of Howe has been... got into a cardboard box to see how the other half lived. I don't think she stayed in there very long, but somebody, a lot of people got into cardboard boxes.
Yes,
really,
yes,
very good.
I think she was in a plastic bag, but nobody could tell the difference. So.
Oh, that's extremely unfair.
It was all about the sponsored charity Sleep Out beside Westminster Cathedral, in which a gaggle of celebrities and Claire Rayner camped around. Sorry, camped out in designer cartons to experience firsthand the traumas of sleeping out in the open with nothing but a cardboard box, 3 dozen film crews and location catering. It's part of a week's activities highlighting the plight of the poor and homeless, which also included Esther Ranson's night braving the horrors of her back garden to highlight the plight of the rich.
She wasn't.
What?
Esther Ranson was actually in a box.
No, she was in her back garden.
Thank God for that. I mean, and Claire Rayner was in a box, too.
Well, I suppose Claire Rayner was in a box. Well, a container, I would
say. Up until then, I thought the worst thing in a cardboard box was Australian muscatel. But I realised...
You couldn't get
Claire Rayner
into a box.
Rayner in a cardboard box. God.
At the end of round one, the scores are unsurprisingly 4-4.
Bye-bye.
Round two kicks off with this literary curio from the Sunday Times book section.
At the Hay-on-Wye Festival, George O'Brien, a Washington-based Irish academic, picked up the John Hughes Prize for his The Village of Longing. Mr. O'Brien was flown in by Penguin.
The Lambing of Market Harbour was touched by that. Simon, back to the poor and needy. Whose tale of destitution sounds a tad trumped up?
Donald Trump, the American New York property millionaire who's met hard times and is unable to meet his bills and is having to sell all his things off. In fact, he calls everything after himself, and he was at one point going to rename himself after himself. Trump, R. Trump, the name screams quality, he said.
You see, the other Trump story this week in the Telegraph, Francis nods.
No,
Francis read it
Northern
all.
Northern Line, yes, go on.
Well, Francis read this on the Northern Line, yeah, in her cardboard box, that Spy magazine pulled a practical joke and sent cheques to umpteen American millionaires for 13 cents, and Trump was the only one that cashed it.
And Murdoch.
That's absolutely right. It's all about Donald Trump, the world's most expensive bachelor-to-be, who announced that he's so destitute that he's down to his last bank. Proof that the poor chap had barely enough to keep the wolf from the security gates came from America's Spy magazine, who sent 68p checks to various millionaires to see who was mean enough to bank them. Unfortunately, Mrs. Trump made it sign it over to her first. Others shown by Spy magazine to be meanies were Shirley MacLaine, millionaire Adnan Khashoggi, and as the Daily Mirror helpfully pointed out in its headline, Rupert Murdoch. Andrew, a legal question for you. Who are being overtaxed by too many of the community on charges?
I think the people who are overtaxed are the council in the Isle of Wight, which couldn't get its case overturned. Am I on the right lines?
Yes, you're on the right. It's slightly larger than that.
It's escalating. They say half of Birmingham haven't paid the poll tax. But certainly all those cases were thrown out in the Isle of Wight for the want of a first-class stamp.
So about our judicial system, which is being swamped by the hundreds of thousands of currently proposed actions against poll tax defaulters. This week, Birmingham announced that half its paying population would be summonsed, an action which sparked off a wave of unrest through the courts. with magistrates taking to the roofs to complain about the overcrowding, which often forces them to sleep four to a bench. A brief respite now while we consider this headline spotted in the Clitheroe Advertiser and Times.
Hurricane brings Nicaraguan to Oxfam shop.
Our thanks to Frederick Shaw of Clitheroe for that. Francis, another one for you now, and it's all in the title of this bit of Clueful Melody. The question is, which mad bad guy came clean about playing dirty? And it's a sports question, but
mad,
not cricket.
Mad bad guy came clean about playing dirty.
We know, we just thought we'd tell you that.
Is it a football question?
No, it's not football.
Tennis.
Well,
it's
McEnroe.
It's Mr. McEnroe.
Yes,
it's
McEnroe.
Has finally revealed that he's got a temper, which some newspapers thought was an exclusive. Anyway, Mr. McEnroe says he's going to see a psychiatrist to have it dealt with. The only question is how many psychiatrists the psychiatrist will now be referred to for taking on Mr. McEnroe.
You're absolutely right. This concerns the revelations by tennis player John McEnroe, currently seeded 36 on the Richter scale. When he's near a court, he starts charging like a maniac, a problem he shares with a lot of solicitors. In a recent biography, McEnroe confesses that he's slightly mad, and it's spoiling his game. Apparently he's not getting as many first serves in since he started wearing a straitjacket. Alan, the Richard Ingram's memorial question. Who's closed the good book on Canterbury?
Well, I know he's not Prince Charles, which is really the Richard Ingram's memorial question. This is William Hill, who have decided that they're taking no further bets in the great handicap hurdle. Hapgood having fallen behind, and there was some sort of dark horse, some strange pastor from an old, probably Ingram's, probably why he's not here. Probably down there on the rail shouting the odds.
No, the Bishop of St. Albans was getting heavy betting at the last leg, round about.
Heavy betting?
Yeah, on him, yeah.
And they were suspecting insider praying.
This is about the decision by bookmakers to close the betting on the church's race of the century, the Robert Runcie Handicap Chase. A particularly heavy flurry of four-figure bets placed on the favourite Bishop Taylor has prompted bookies to suspect insider dealing. Moreover, the situation was compounded after an elderly Canterbury parishioner tried cashing an old betting slip which had Thomas a Becket down for each way. And at the end of round two, the scores are Alan and Francis 8, but Simon and Andrew in the lead with 9. We celebrate the midpoint of the quiz with this revealing ecclesiastical yarn from the Oxford Times.
Yarnton Parish Council expressed appreciation of the amount of time and energy that Mrs. Barbara Bolton has devoted to the parish clerk. She said she found it interesting and enjoyable, and much regretted having to resign so soon after her appointment.
And that was sent to us by a listener who wishes to remain anonymous, since she says she lives in the neighbouring village. Simon Hoggart, your next question. On family matters, who's been preaching to the unconvertible? Royalty.
I was sitting at the in the Richard Ingram's memorial seat, and his spirit speaks to me.
Good.
And his spirit is saying, I haven't the foggiest idea.
It's
the royals. Well, you gave me a clue. The royals. It's a Prince Philip, who's not only telling us to get our fingers up, but any other part of the body that happens to be lying around, and to have fewer children.
And pull our socks down whilst we do it.
If you pull your socks up while you're doing it, you're almost certain not to have children over. This all concerns one of those things that happens to the best regulated families, Prince Philip. The Prince, father of four, if he still counts Edward, offered birth control advice to the one person who'll never need it, the Pope. And now a snip from the travel section of The Guardian.
All for £232 a night for two, including free swimming, riding and cycling within the 750-acre estate. For £300, I could have stayed in a palatial royal suite, sleeping in the same bed as King Juan Carlos.
And that five-star offering came from Barry Pywell of Hitchin. Francis, how can you get a new and truly inimitable portrait of the Queen for a fiver?
Ah, yes. They've decided to change the £5 note, the £10 note, and the £20 note. It's that will now be in colour, with Brenda in more sort of wrinkly pose. Not quite so sort of regal and juvenile as she once appeared. In colour, the fiver, and I think they've knocked Earl Wellington off the back and put, you know, the chap that invented steam engines on the back of the fiver.
But the Queen, I mean, there have been a lot of complaints about the Queen looking like this double-chinned granny.
But
it looks
she
like
proved...
she's been through two rounds with Mike Tyson.
She didn't mind, so they... all in colour, anyway.
I think she was just glad to find her head rather than Mrs. Thatcher's on the head.
Well answered. It's all to do with the issue of a new unforgettable £5 note, which is smaller, cheaper, and as likely as not made in Japan. It's also printed on quick shrinking paper to keep it in line with inflation. Part of the new design features a small device designed to make counterfeiting more difficult. Officially, it's described as a small turquoise blob of ink, but unofficially it's been recognised as the controversial new portrait of the Queen. Alan, what's the latest in fast food from the former purveyor of dog's dinners?
I ought to declare an interest here. I've waited my entire life for a smart quango, or for one of those jobs you get when you're David Owen. But this is a thing that Freud and I are conjoined in.
Really?
Yes, which is the Intercity Sandwich Improvement Scheme. And every year, our little party four will convene, in fact we convene twice a year, and taste fillings invented by Freud. A man came on a bike on Tuesday with corned beef and tangerine. Really quite ghastly, and then there was salmon with stuff in it, which Freud had got from his window box. But in fact, he thought they were going to break the mould of English politics, and there is a member for Ely chopping things out of his window box into sandwiches, and I will have to eat them and tell the people of Britain that whether it's good or bad.
Well, absolutely right, in every respect. It's all about British Rail sandwiches, which in future are to be filled by Sir Clement Freud. Sir Clement has used his immense gastronomic talent and experience to recommend two sandwich fillings.
That's right.
One is called the Corran, and the other, presumably, is called the Freud.
Yeah, and he knows about chunky meat as well, which is very dispiriting.
But we have come to the end of the third round of the scores at this interesting stage of the competition. Are Alan and Francis 12, but Simon and Andrew is still in the lead with 13. Yeah. Well, yeah. And now, Simon Hoggart, your final question, and this final burst of clueful musical talent.
If you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every pair that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today is the day that teddy bears have their pay.
Simon, who has their outings by appointment?
Why do I always get the royal questions? This is
indeed the England's
Prince Charles.
Chair.
Well, you've been listening to his father. His father said there are quite enough children on this planet already. We can't do with you going to bed with your wife and be getting more children. So Prince Charles revealed that he went to bed with his teddy bear instead. On the grounds that, you know, he'd like Princess Di a lot more if she had one eye hanging out on a bit of wire.
It's all concerns Prince Charles's inanimate plaything, his faithful old teddy bear. According to sources close to the royal toy cupboard, His Highness is never separated from Teddy except on military engagement. Also shed new light on the Prince's passionate concern for house designs, which he now says shouldn't be just neoclassical, but also very small with hinges down the side. So the whole front opens for Teddy to get in. Andrew, bring your parliamentary knowledge to bear on this one. Which grand American president looks to Parliament to let him in?
Which side of the former Iron Curtain are we here, sort of?
Well, this side.
Not even close.
Which Miles
grand president?
But of course, Alan Corrin,
where
the
are
sandwich
you,
king.
Who is running? We've had an obscure George Washington story.
That's right.
And this is another George Washington who tried to come into Britain on a coracle or a bucket or whatever and claimed he was George Washington, but he wasn't at all. There's not much more to it than that, is there?
No.
Oh, it's quite a lot when you think about it, really. But I mean, lunatic.
It is very good indeed.
Stepping ashore at Ramsgate saying, "I am George Washington."
This is the peculiar case of Alexander Borer, an American who thinks he's George Washington, and his refused entry into Britain on the grounds of delusions of grandeur. His case has now been taken up by George Galloway MP, fearful that the ruling could also bar politicians. All of Winch brings us to this item from the letters page of the Mail on Sunday.
I buy my free-range eggs from nearby allotments, but when I buy them from shops, I have grave doubts about how free-range they actually are. It's the same with potatoes.
Mrs. Joan Foxon of Hinckley sent us that cutting. Frances, which lady was saddled with an unfair speeding ticket?
Just waiting for Corrin's Cyrillic script, dyslexic Cyrillic script to come
He's
through.
He's probably designing a sandwich. So I'm just going to have a Corrin.
The Awesome Walnut.
Oh, yes.
Very nice, the Awesome Walnut.
Awesome,
a bit of mayonnaise, the Awesome Walnut. Goes down quickly.
I know.
Yes, the lady who insisted on riding her horse at a canter, or the policeman said it was a canter, and she said it wasn't, it was just a sort of trot, really.
Silly canter.
Yeah, a silly canter. Very silly. And then she was done again, wasn't she?
They'll cut that out.
Even sillier canter.
That's the tale of Constance Scrayfield, who successfully appealed against conviction for speeding through Richmond Park on her friend Patrick, a horse. Insisting the Richmond Park police had a vendetta against her, she said she daren't risk riding any slower as the horse was fed up with being clamped. Finally, Alan, where are tomato lovers hoping their attentions bear fruit?
Yes, it's a bit unsavoury, this, as I recall. Those who know about tomatoes, or alternatively those who know about other things and assume tomatoes are the same, believe that if you murmur lovingly to a tomato and stroke it, it will get bigger. Where they get their ideas from, I have no idea. But there is a controlled test going to happen this summer with 25 fortunate tomatoes who are going to be interfered with and 25 unfortunate ones who just hang around on the plant doing their best to swell on their own. End of the day, we shall know much more about human beings than we knew at the start.
Charles, who started all this again, isn't it? Talking because in between market. Sleeping with his teddy bear, he wanders around his garden chatting up the tomatoes.
They're changing sex at Buckingham Palace.
Christopher Robbins turned into Alice, yes. And, Punch 1923. Now, you're quite right, Alan. This all refers to a West German experiment among 50 tomato growers to test whether chatting up their Ailsa Craigs makes any difference to their growth. It's all happening at a radio station in Cologne, who are asking their listeners to take part in the experiment.
Very exciting radio, actually, tomato stroking, isn't it?
Better than Radio 1. Anyway, before we sign off, can I ask everyone to entertain us with a choice cutting? Simon, do you have anything?
I have two ecclesiastical ones, Barry, this week. One is from the Sussex Express. Notice in church vestibule, churchyard maintenance is becoming increasingly difficult. It will be appreciated if parishioners will cut the grass around their own graves. This is from another local paper. The Reverend Ian Orlibar, rector of St. Nicholas Church, Barton le Clay, was asked to look back on his career and said, "I always feel my finest achievement was to restrain the girl guides from calling their Bob a Job Week, willing for a shilling."
Oh dear, very good. Andrew.
Well, this one is from the Bucks Herald. It's just in their news in brief column. Wendover hairdresser Karen Mead went into hospital with a swollen foot only to find she was 9 months pregnant.
Francis, what have you brought us?
This is from The Observer. The piece is entitled Romanian's First Steps to Freedom. It's about a consignment of artificial limbs that have been sent over to Romania. Mr. Germany said last week, we decided that we should pay for him to come over and have a new leg fitted. It was something concrete we could do.
Very good. Alan?
Well, I'm tired of all these fiddling minor stories that we do every week. I've got a major international one, Barry, from the Yarrawanga Weekly Chronicle, which is in New South Wales. It says, the whole town's still talking about Charlie Machit's little escapade last week. On Friday, Charlie came out of his local, The Crow, and spotted, coming out of the barbershop opposite, his twin brother Sydney, who he hadn't seen since they were gangers together in Perth 24 years ago. He shouted, Sid! Sid! But it was only when he was halfway across the street that he realised that what he had seen in the barbershop door was his own reflection. There is, would you believe, a payoff line to this, which says, well wishers help to distraught Charlie back into the Crow.
Well, even if you hadn't already won the contest, I'd have given it to you. The final scores are Simon and Andrew, a very well-earned 16, but Alan and Francis, this week's winners, with 17. Well played. Damn close run thing. And we leave you with this poignant story sent to us by C. Payne of London and taken from the Morton and Middleton Express.
Bruiser David Smith was jailed for 6 months after being nicked 4 times in 5 weeks for drunken driving. Smith's catalogue of arrests ended when he was found slumped over the wheel of his car at traffic lights in Manchester city centre. Prosecution said Smith had been an alcoholic for 17 years. He'd been hoping to start a taxi business.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Simon Hoggart, Andrew Rawnsley, Francis Edmonds and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by John Langdon and the producer, Armando Iannucci.